Welcome over to the newest episode of Better in 3D. I'm your host, Matthew James Greener, and it's a classic solo episode. Hello, everyone. Hey, I know it's been a while. We took a very, very long break. To be honest with you, I kind of thought we were done, but I decided to give this another go. It's been like 6 months since an episode, but I don't know. I got a hankering to do the best of the year in the Oscar episode, so just that's coming real soon. But I thought I should like have a practice run before I get me. I think it's gonna be me and Bob doing the best of the year, and then maybe me and Heather doing an Oscar episode. So I'm just getting the juices, boy. I mean, I still record occasionally on my Courage podcast, our sister podcast, Peg with Paul, which, you know, other co-host Paul Unger, and frankly all the other co-hosts have gone. I mean, I don't want to be mean, but they've basically all bowed out. Just to be transparent, I doubt you'll hear, you won't be hearing from Molly or Allison or Mike or Paul. I don't think so. Maybe Paul or Mike, I don't know, but like rarely. So we're gonna retire their jerseys, their film critic jerseys in the rafters. They are welcome at any time to stop in. If they want to pop on an episode, they can definitely pop on. But I feel like as myself, I got tired of it too. I was gonna be done with it, but I don't know. I got a hankering to talk about some movies. Maybe since like September, I've seen like more movies in the last like 5 months than a couple years combined. I've been going on the movie binges, and it was nice not to have to record about it. But now I have all this like movie knowledge, and I haven't been doing that. So if you are new to the podcast, this is the strangest episode to ever be on, because it's by myself, and it's like it's a resurrection. It is the prelude to the resurrection episode that's going to be coming out next week. But what we are is the Milwaukee's or Wisconsin's premier drinking movie podcast. We're a bunch of people with some average IQs and above average livers, because we're definitely not experts and we're definitely not sober. So basically, if you haven't listened before, we create the vibe if you get a bunch of friends at a bar hanging out talking about movies. I myself was a film critic for 11 years for the good city of the Niagara Falls, but now in the last few years just doing podcasts. So that is what's going on. Usually we do talk about new movies, we review them, and then we have a big old topic and we go crazy on it. Today is just going to be me talking about movies I've seen the last month or so. I might skip over a few that will be probably in my top 10 list on the next episode. So I may not do those, but I saw an insane amount of movies this last few months. I'm going to try to remember off the top of my head. This is going to be a real improv jazz-like episode for me. You know, just having a ball, that kind of stuff. So just tell me the movies I've seen. So I went and saw a bunch of movies just recently. So I'm going to work from ones I just saw to maybe a few more. We'll see how long this goes. But last night, good friend of the show, Heather Kring, I saw The Brutalist, the Oscar-nominated Best Picture, long epic, I guess. So it stars Adrian Brody and Guy Pearce and Felicity Jones, are probably the three main actors you know the most. I'm not going to lie to everyone here. This movie didn't hit me as much. I was very excited for it. I really was, had a lot of love at the Golden Globes. Got a lot of nominations. So I don't know what I was with. I went in kind of blind. I knew that it was a post-World War II Holocaust kind of movie because from just some of the jokes I saw at the Golden Globes. But other than that, I didn't really know much about it. And I kind of was like, you know, let's go in blind. Yeah, I'm going to trust the critics. I'm going to trust that because I like Adrian Brody. I mean, I think he's completely underrated. I mean, I obviously liked him in, you know, Pianist when he won his Oscar, but I liked him in Predators and Splice and all the weird stuff he does. So, like, The Jacket. If you guys haven't seen The Jacket, it's a weird movie that he does, like, with time travel and, like, or, I don't know, or maybe it's just crazy. It's weird. It's the closest thing to Jacob's Ladder out there. But either way, I was excited. So I want to get the good things off first. Like, as the kids said, give them their flowers. The acting's superb. Adrian Brody does great work. I get why he's nominated. And if he won for Best Actor, I wouldn't be upset about it. But as far as the people who are nominated this year, I think it should go to Chalamet. Just look it off that either way. Or someone else. I just don't think it's... But I mean, if you gave it to him, I wouldn't be angry about it. Because it's phenomenal acting. Guy Pearce, who I don't know, man. I've never been a huge Guy Pearce fan. I always feel kind of overrated. He's had some few movies that I've really liked him in. But in general, I'm always not. But this is maybe some of the best work he's ever done. So as the antagonist, I don't know. I'm going to try to explain this story without spoiling too much, but I don't know if I can even spoil it because it's a movie that's, for record, is 3 hours and 30 minutes, and it has a legit intermission, a 15-minute intermission in the middle of the movie, and I have no idea why. Nothing really happens in this movie. It's the thing I'm going to tell you right now. It's extremely boring. It's a boring movie. But it's so well made. I'm like heavy on my seat. Like, okay, something's finally going to happen. Something's finally going to happen. The spoiler. Things really don't happen. I guess at the end, which I won't spoil that, some things do happen, but it's like, I waited all this. I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you. You probably could just watch the second half of the after the intermission and get the same out, and that actually would be a good movie. That hour and a half is the better half, and it's at least more interesting. Follows our character, Laszlo, who is played by Adrian Brody, who it's him just getting to Ellis Island, escaping Europe after World War II. And it starts in 19... I think this is the first, like... It goes to chapters. So the first chapter is, like, 1947, 1953. And I think it's 1953 to 1958. And then I think it's just 59 to 73. Like, it goes 1959, it's, like, one thing. And then it's, like, 1973. Like, it's a big old jump. Or 1959, 1973. And then it's, like... I know it ends in 1980. But either way... He is a somewhat famous architect. They left Budapest. That's where he was living. And he's fled because he's Jewish, so he got asylum here in America. He moves in with his cousin, who works at a furniture store, and that's where they meet Guy Pearce's family, who's a super rich Van Buren family. They ask him to do some work. It kind of goes sideways. It kind of leads to Adrian Brody's character like have to like kind of live in a homeless shelter and or like have like a kind of demeaning job, but. Once the rich patron played by Guy Pearce, the Van Buren head also, kind of looks at the work he did and like gets kind of celebrated in the media. He kind of wants him to come back and work for him. Like he found this artist on the street kind of deal. And it's a lot about that, like that, their relationship. And then also, he has a wife and a niece who are still stuck in Europe, and they're trying to get here, and they're trying to get them back, which sounds like it could be a really interesting story. The whole movie, I was waiting for flashbacks to the war, or why Adrian Brody's character is, like, suffering the way it does, and, like, you know, other than the fact that he's very prideful and stubborn, he's kind of a dick. He's not a good person. The whole movie, he's not that good of a person. You give him a pass early on because he's not being treated well, and he's not. He's not being treated well, and bad things do happen to him. But it's not like he's putting good in the universe, either. So, look, I mean, so this is a long movie, with great acting and great cinematography, beautifully shot, great score. But my God, was this screenplay without anything. I don't get it. Like, it was like, and I don't want to spoil the end because there's one of the main characters is quoted at the end giving like a synopsis about this person's life, which seems to be the exact opposite of what the movie was doing. I don't want to spoil that because, like, me and my friend saw it and we walked it because I can't believe the balls to say that line at the end because it's the exact opposite of what we just went through. So I'm going to give this movie, like, if you want to see it, don't see it in the theater. Even though it is gorgeous and it was shot completely on 35mm film, it's shot in a certain ratio, so it's beautifully shot. So I guess it is worth seeing if you're, like, a cinephile and you're going to see all the aspects, then definitely see that. But, like, it's really long. It's 3.5 hours with the 15-minute intermission, and I don't think it was worth it. So, I don't know. I don't want to bag on it too much because I'll probably, if I had to give it a grade, a B minus, but, you know, whatever. So, let's get on to some of the other movies I saw recently. That's what I saw yesterday. The day before, I saw four movies. Let's start with the one I liked, and I liked a lot, Nosferatu. I knew I was going to like it. I love this director. I love the stuff he does. I love the acting. I mean, Skarsgård as Conor Orlok. I really like Nicholas Holt. I love Willem Dafoe. I mean, there's so many good actors in this movie. And the way it's shot, the way they're like the barely color, like there's so much black and white with like a hint of color. I liked it. It's a little long. And if your complaint was like it should have been 20 minutes shorter, I'm not going to argue with that. But I liked enough. It is so faithful to the original one. Not even by story, which does mostly follow the same story. But, like, in vibes is the best way to put it. It feels like the original silent film, the black and white Nosferatu. It's creepy. It's ominous. It follows the vampire rule. I mean, I really liked it, and it's creepy. It's gothic horror at its best. Great acting, great cinematography. But at the same time, anytime there's a remake that's that faithful, like I love that this has been made and put out in the world, because like younger generations should, and like I feel like people are not searching out Nosferatu. Like I feel like my generation got it because we had the Shadow of the Vampire movie, basically like a fake mockumentary about like if Matt Shrek, who played Orlok, might have been an actual real vampire, and there was like some like so there was like resurgence of interest in the original Nosferatu, and I think all like traditional horror fans like want to watch it. I mean, I feel like some people think that horror started with the Universal monsters, but here's a false favor. I mean, there's some out there that predate the Universal ones or right on the same time. We're talking the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, Nosferatu, London Fog, The Strangler. They're out there. There's some weird silent films out there that were horror before the Universal monsters. So, I mean, if you don't know the tale of Nosferatu in general, it's about this young man who's married to what do you want to call it? It's played by Lily Rose Depp. Which I've only really seen her in, Yoga Hosers, and I feel like maybe something else, but not a lot of things. She was pretty good in it, really was. I was surprised. They're newlyweds. He is a real estate solicitor. He's like trying to get his foot in the door at a firm, and this also takes place in Germany in like 1837. And he has been summoned by his boss to go help a like seal deal. There's like this eclectic, eccentric count who lives like in basically Transylvania, but like that's what it is. And he needs to go there and like do the deal there. Like, and he's like, why can't we do it through correspondence, or why can't he come here? He's he wants to buy something in your home, our hometown, but he wants to have it done there. So he's like, if you do this, you'll get paid handsomely and have a great bonus, and you'll like, it'll secure how you rent full time. So he's going to go, there, and then his wife, psychic witch, whatever you want to call her, like she is tied into the magical realm. She has visions. She has there's a, like a flashback to her early on, like maybe talking, like sleepwalking and talking to, I guess, the vampire. And she has been like kind of troubled her most life until she's been married or found her true love. But like it sounds like early on, she made a promise to be with, I don't know, with this vampire. And so the vampire is summoning is like kind of controlling our main character, Nicholas's boss. Like, there's like one of his, like, it's basically lack of reference. It's Renfield. I hate using Bram Stoker's Dracula to, like, illustrate it, but that's the best way for most people to know. And then, like, chaos ensues. There's some doctors who are, like, little, one's like a traditional, like, psychiatrist, and one is, like, a little more into the occult. And they're trying to figure out what's going on. A lot of people think there's a plague is happening, but really it's this dark demon. Although, like, this version of the of a vampire is more demonic in nature, more just straight up evil. It's the shadow. It's just pure evil and darkness. Not so much like a sub creature monster. It's just more just straight up evil. Yeah, I liked it. And also, Skarsgård, he plays all the monsters, and he's always good at it, you know? So, I liked it. Like I said, the Brutalist gets a B-, this one gets an A-, for sure. I wish it had a little bit more love of the Oscars, but I'm not upset that it didn't get a ton. I don't think it needed to be nominated for Best Picture, but if it did, I wouldn't be upset either. So, but Nosferatu, liked it. Saw a couple other weird movies. So, there was an anime that came out called The Colors Within. I was excited because it was the same like art director who did the Herring, the Boy and the Herring. Some people I liked, some creators have on this movie were in other movies I liked. It was like a 92 on Rotten Tomatoes, like a 93 on CineScore, our audience score. So I was kind of excited. I was like, when there's like a real good anime that I haven't really heard about, and it's like in theaters. Like that's how one of my favorite anime movies of all time was Your Name, and I literally stumbled on that just like one of those phantom events that they had. So I was excited, like, let's go. So me and my buddy Bob, we went and saw it. Once again, pause right away. It's gorgeous. Has a great soundtrack, a great score. Other than that, this is the most... I said the Brutalist was boring. Brutalist was like a... had me on the edge of the seat compared to this movie. This movie was boring. Now, it might be two things. like sometimes when you're hearing a foreign film, and we saw it in sub, not dubbed, maybe I'm not the audience, right? Maybe this is for a society or a culture and or age and probably gender that I'm not, and maybe that's why I'm not finding what's so great about it. Like, I didn't love like Kiki's Delivery Service as much as other people love. Like, it's like one of my least favorite Studio Ghibli films, and people seem to love that one. So maybe just this one's not for me. But the basic story is there's this girl, and she goes to a private school, a Catholic school, in Japan, which I did not know. I had to look up. I didn't realize how much about the Japanese Catholicism, or like what role it plays in Japan. Heads up, this movie is full of Christ references and God references. This is a very pro-Christian movie. I was not ready for that, to be honest with you. Just, I mean, they don't like force it on your throat or anything, but it's throughout the whole thing. There's nuns, there's like the quote Isaiah. God is brought up a lot this way, but it's not done in like a way like trying to convert you or point anything. It's just like part of their culture. Like, these kids go to school that where God is very important. So this one girl who's there, who's our main character, she says she has a quirk or a power that she can see the colors within. For lack of a better word, she can see people's auras. And she can see what kind of colors they are. And one day in gym class, one girl, like, she sees one girl's aura, and it's so beautiful, like, it stuns her. So much so that she gets hit in the face with a dodgeball. She's like, oh my God, your aura is so beautiful. And then, like, the next day, the girl's just gone. And she's kind of looking for her, and she finds out from some friends that, like, she dropped out of school. Spoiler, they never explain why she dropped out of school. She just decided to do it one day. There's a couple of rumors going on why, but she never does it. But, like, this girl's so enamored by her colors that she needs to find her. So she heard that she's working at a bookstore. She tries to find her. She goes, like, every bookstore, and she finds her. And when she's there, she sees that she's playing an instrument, and she basically says, I play an instrument, too. And a boy there who's been, like, hanging out also plays an instrument, and he has beautiful colors. And they decide to form a band, which is okay way to start a cool little, like, fun teenage coming-of-age movie, which I thought I was getting. I saw it at some point, like, the color, like, the ability to see color. She does say to them at one point that she can see, like, souls, the colors within. And they're all, like, cool. Like, that does not faze them at all. But, like, she hides it from everyone else because she doesn't want people to think she's weird. And they don't think she's weird, but it doesn't even slow down for a second. Like, it'd be like if I was like, hey, guys, I don't like tomatoes. And they were like, yeah, cool. That's how much reaction they get. And you think a plot point where someone can see the colors then, that would be a big part of the movie. Like, it's called, that's the title of the movie. Like, I was thought at some point we're going to see, like, she can, like, read the colors, and, like, if someone's, like, sad or depressed, like, she's going to use that to, like, help them out. Or, like, if someone's, like, not a good person, she can, like, warn someone. Or, like, it was going to have some kind of device in the film. Spoilers, it does nothing. She, like, you know, she doesn't even use it ever often. Like, happens, like, two or three times right at the beginning, and then, like, one more time at the end. Like, the point where, like, it was not necessary at all, except for a reason for these three people to be friends, because they don't make any sense. Like, it's this one boy who goes to a different school and wants to be, his big problem is he loves music, wants to be a musician, but his parents are doctors, and they want him to become a doctor, and he's going to do it because he would need to go to the private practice. And it's not like that, he doesn't have the courage to tell his mom and dad that he likes to play music. And the other girl drops out of school for no apparent reason, but she's afraid to tell her grandma because her grandma is such a good mom to her, like, raised her because her own parents couldn't, and she's just scared to do it. And then the other one just doesn't really have friends, and now she's got friends. And they perform a band, and they play music. And I didn't want to spoil much of it, but that is the plot of the movie. It goes on. It's like an hour and 40 minutes, but that is it, man, guys. That is, they become friends, and then they form a band. And there's no real arc. There's no real challenge. I don't know what, I mean, there's some minor ones, but, like, nothing that deserves a movie. Whole movie, I was waiting for something to happen. At one point, I just asked Bob, I go, hey, do you want to leave? He's like, oh, we've been there this long. Because it felt like something's got to happen eventually. I will give one thing. They do basically do like a concert at the end. And usually when a song or a band is playing, like, you saw School of Rock, you might play, like, one song fully through, maybe, or more times when it's, like, band stuff, they play just, like, 30 seconds of a song, and they go to the next song, and, like, they're showing, like, what they can do. They play a full concert, and we watch it, and a fully animated concert. It's like, you know, Jim and the Holograms, but, you know, not as fun. So, I don't want to be mean about it, because it's sweet. It's obviously made for someone, and the animation's great. The music's really good, too. I will probably download the music that the little band they had. But I don't know why this movie existed. So, once again, I feel maybe it's meant for, like, young girls from Japan. And, like, maybe that... and because that's what the plot is around. And maybe I just don't understand that. And so I don't want to crap too hard at it because, like, it has all the bones and the feeling of a really well-made movie. So I just didn't really... It was hard for me to sit through it just because I was beyond bored. But it's a very sensitive movie. It's really, like, all it is about just people, just shy people becoming friends is basically the gist of it. Which I feel like could have done in maybe 15 minutes of the movie, and then we could have moved on to someone else. But, you know, I don't know. We'll keep moving along. Because I want to, like, I guess, you know what, the movie that surprised me, because I had such negative connotation from a friend of mine, I saw The Presence, which is a twofer movie I saw back-to-back, because, once again, I saw these 2 days ago, I saw four movies in one day, and I'm going to order I saw, but the two last ones have a very weird device in them, where the camera that you're looking through is a POV shot, point of view, which is weird that two movies come at the exact same time with that exact same premise. It's a weird thing to happen where the whole movie's shown from a point of view of a person. The first movie is The Presence, which is done by Soderbergh, who, and I'm going to say right now, people said this is a horror movie. It's 100% not a horror movie. It is a ghost story, 100%. It's more fantasy than it, but it is a ghost story. So it is supernatural, but it is no way scary at all. And it's written by the screenplay guy who did Jurassic Park. So, like, the pedigree is weird, but this is a weird combo movie. It's a movie that takes place in a house. You are the point of view of the ghost that is haunting this new family who just moved in. The two actors you might know, Lucy Liu's in the movie. She plays the mom. And I forget the actor's name, but he was in the show This Is Us. He was not one of the big three. He was the husband of the sister. I like him. He's been in a couple of other things. He's pretty good in it too. Basic idea is this family moves into this house for kind of a fresh start. There's a son and a daughter. They're both in high school. I think the son, I want to say the son is 16 and 15 or maybe 17. Like, they're like 1 year apart. And the daughter is going through a rough time because her friend recently OD'd and kind of bothered her. Very early on, she can sense a presence, name of the thing, a ghost, and she's pretty sure it's her friend, which I do like with this movie right away. There's not like a lot of like, oh, am I going crazy? Is this going on? There's like the ghost seems to want to help and protect the daughter or maybe the whole family. There's this point in the movie where like the ghost makes itself known to the entire family where they cannot deny that this has happened. The dad right away tries to help, like he calls a psychic basically, and they come in there and they kind of throw the thing around like where ghosts are presents, but they're not always like in time the right way. You don't really know who they are. The feeling you get from the rest of this movie is a little Donnie Darko-ish. There's a little bit of time stuff going on. There's some ghost stuff going on, but a lot of it's mostly about the family, how they deal. Like the mom is seems to really only care about their son. Like she puts all of her time and faith and energy and everything into him, and he's kind of a dick to his sister all the time. Like they don't care that she's going through some stuff. Like and like the fact that the husband is like he's constantly reminding the mother that we have two kids, and she's like, she's fine, don't worry about it. She's like, no, she's not, and like. There's like the point where you think they're gonna get divorced, and it's also implied that the mom has done something at work that's super shady that like might be illegal. We're not really exactly sure, but like this is the dynamic of the family, which I enjoyed. And then a person comes into the scene that is threatening that family, and how the ghost reacts to it. I don't get too much away. It's a short film, which I like an hour and 20 minutes, real tight. I didn't mind the POV thing. I thought it was going to bother me at some point. It didn't. It really worked pretty good. I saw the twist coming, which I think it's... But I don't think it is. Honestly, if someone had told me... so it's kind of spoiled for me. Goes that there was a twist coming. I would not expect a twist because this movie doesn't seem like there's a twist coming. So it's done well. But I liked it. I think it's a tight, good movie. It's not a horror movie. So you think it's going to be a horror movie, that's not it. It is a ghost story about family drama that's done pretty well. by a good director. I like it. I give a solid B. I'm glad I saw it. Which goes to the next movie I just saw. Another movie that was in a POV format. I saw the Oscar nominee for Best Picture, Nickel Boys. Nickel Boys basically has the same premise, except it changed it. There's two main characters, even though we follow one more than the other. And it's from their point of view. It takes place in like the 60s around the civil rights movement. It's a young boy who starts about to go to college early. Basically gets in trouble because he's walking home and someone offers a ride, and the guy who took a ride from him gets stolen the car, and because he's a black kid in America at the time, they kind of throw the book at him, though he's like, he didn't really do anything wrong, so just got in the car with someone. And he has to go to this reform school, which is like the Nickel Institution, or Nickel Academy, whatever it was. Where the term Nickel Boys comes when he meets his friend. And those two form an unlikely alliance in a place that is not good. It's not surprising that this reform school does awful and horrible things to their students, especially their black students. And they're like kind of like this juvenile hall kind of thing. And it's them kind of banding together and what they think about what's going on. And it keeps switching point of view between the two main characters. You follow one for a little bit, you follow the other one, and then when they do kind of switch, it's more where like one will say a line of dialogue and they'll kind of pause a second, they'll flip over to the next one, and then they'll repeat that same dialogue, line of dialogue from a different point of view. And I don't want to give too much away, especially the ending. I like this movie, but it's another movie. This feels like an ongoing theme in today's reviews, and I don't want that to be the thing, but this movie was a little long. Unlike The Presence, I had a problem with the POV thing. It felt more distracting than innovative at the end. The movie's 2 hours and 20 minutes. I don't know what I gained from it too much. Like, it's an interesting exercise in filmmaking. But, I don't know. I would have just preferred just to have a regular film, to be honest with you. But in general, the movie was pretty decent. I think this speaks to the lack of film this year. I don't see this getting nominated for an Oscar Best Picture in any other year. There were so many better movies out there. I mean, if you want, Sing Sing was great, and some other movies. Like, there's some really good movies out there that got lucked over. I have an Oscar movie episode coming up, but I will talk about the Oscars and what's going on. But this movie's a solid B. Good acting. Shot well. It's got a decent plot. But nothing like monumental. I feel like if this was not an Oscar for nominated for Best Picture, I just went and saw it, I think I liked it a lot more. I think I had some high standards. I mean, if you're supposed to be the 10 best films of the year, I go in with certain hype, that both that and The Brutalist. I came in with like certain expectations of quality. And to be honest, the filmmaking's done well, but both suffer just for I just feel like not stellar scripts. They're just not. The pacings are off in both of them. They're indulgent on character building to a fault. I'm all about character building. I love character building. A lot in characters. But these movies were drunk on character building. It took forever to get to the points and stuff. And when it did get there, it felt rushed. And then we moved to the other things. I mean, I'm all about subtext, but sometimes you need to give some actual movement in your story through the story, not around it. I mean, you need plot points that are actually things I'm watching, not things I'm hearing about or afraid of or seeing. It's like, I know less is more, but when you give so much and you give that less, like you're in 2 hours and 20 minutes, I need a little bit more. But in general, it was a good movie. I just feel like I've seen a lot of movies kind of like it. It didn't feel like super original except for the POV kind of how it worked that way. But in general, it was a good movie. Best Picture, no, it's a solid B. The acting was good. I wish I knew the name of the actors in my head. I had it before, but they are the actors play the boys. The one who plays the grandmother are really, really well done. Especially the woman who played the grandmother, she's fantastic in it. So either way, Nickel Boys was a weird one for me. I don't know. I don't know. Earlier year, I was surprised by movies. So surprised. A movie I saw a few weeks ago, Complete Unknown, starring Timothée Chalamet, which is a movie I thought I would dislike because I'm not a huge biopic person in general. I feel like we have oversaturated that. All the way back 20 years ago when we got, Walk the Line and Ray, every year is just Ocean Time, there's just, it's biopic, 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 biopic. And don't wrong, some biopics are good and necessary. But just because someone's famous doesn't mean I need to see their whole inner of their lives. And it just, it's done too much. There's like, just biopics done. I think this is where there's like, wasn't there a Bob Marley movie? There was a Whitney Houston movie. I feel like there's just movies all, I think there was a Aretha Franklin movie like last year. Like there's like if you're a famous singer, it seems like there's a biopic about you. I don't need every one of them. I'll tell you why I like this one. And I like more than that because, you know, it's a biopic about Bob Dylan. It's more about that time. You spend a lot of time with Guthrie and Johnny Cash and other musicians at the time. It's based on a book called Dylan Goes Electric. It's mostly also about like the kind of the peak of the folk movement and kind of about how it kind of ended out. I knew generally about folk, but this really kind of fills it in. It just follows Bob Dylan for like 5 years of his life, maybe four. I forget exact dates on it, but basically he comes in, he becomes a folk artist because that was the popular thing. And be a folk artist is usually like it's about songwriting and poetry, and you don't use electric guitars. You don't use acoustic, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's a movement, and Bob Dylan became the face because he was the best at it. He kind of championed it, but he was young and he decided he wanted to go a different way. I like Chalamet's performance. I like Ed Norton's performance. There's some really good stuff there. I mean, I love Ed Norton. We talked about this before. I seem to like whatever he does. And frankly, early in his career, I really did not want to like Timothée Chalamet. I was like, who is this guy? I don't want to like him. But between Dune and this and everything he's done recently, I'm like, just can't help it. I guess he's fantastic. His portrayal of Bob Dylan is spot on. His singing is spot on. The singing done in the movie is fantastic, and it's him doing the singing. It's just about these 4 years. It doesn't really make Bob Dylan seem like an overall genius or a good person or a bad person. He seems like a flawed person who's just trying to make art and who happens to be extremely talented at writing, but is maybe not the greatest personal time, but it doesn't like villainize him. I hate when you get a biopic where someone's like, oh, you didn't know this with it. Like, he just seems like kind of a jerk sometimes, and sometimes a good person, sometimes not. It seems like he just wants to make his art, and that draws people in. The idea that like being a great artist or a genius art, you know, draws people to you, and then gives people, I guess, an unfair of like expectation, and then of like what kind of person you should be, and then when you're not that, like they write it off because he's this great artist. So in general, a good movie. I was really not expecting to like it. Could have known, I'll give an A, and I'm okay they got nominated for Best Picture. Out of all the movies that were coming out Oscar time, that I was like, that was the one I did not want to see at all. My sister wanted to see it, and anytime she wants to see a movie, I'll take her because, you know, I'll see anything. So, and she doesn't go to the movies that often. So I was like, yes, let's go see Uncomplete Unknown. Beautifully acted, beautifully shot, well-made movie, tight movie. Like, here, that's one that was not too long. I could have sat there for another 30 minutes. My sister thought it was too long. She was a little bit of, I was eating it up. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And really gave me insight to an artist I know. I mean, I feel like every guy, when he hits like, goes to college, the first couple years, he just falls in love with Bob Dylan. We all heard Dylan a bunch of times. I have since not, like, I don't listen to Dylan that often anymore, but I guess I didn't know, you know, it's way before my time, so I guess I didn't know, like, the ins and outs of it, so it was interesting to me, like, to, like, know the gist of it, but get a lot more of it, so, an interesting, movie, and I liked it. I know I saw this a few months ago, but I haven't talked about it, and at this point, I think you might stream it, and this is really goes out to some Wisconsin guys who are listening. A movie that gave me information about something I thought I knew, but I guess I didn't know enough, was the documentary Just a Bit Outside. I'm gonna give that movie a goddamn A. For you people who are not from Wisconsin or the Milwaukee area, this is a documentary about the 1982 Brewers who made it to the World Series, and they're kind of like crazy, like miracle run to get at it. I was born in 1982, frankly, during the World Series. So I hear about it is if you're a Brewer fan, and I'm a dire Brewer fan, like everyone talks about it, but like, so I thought I knew the story real well. I did not. It is produced by Gorman Thomas, who was on the team. It is so much better. It has no right being this good as a documentary. They got all the players to talk about. They go the ins and out of it. They have great footage. They really break down the season beat by beat by beat. talking what makes that team special, what that team means to Milwaukee, why it still means that to Milwaukee and the state and Wisconsin in general. Learned just so much about players. I mean, I know Robin Yount, I know Paul Molitor, I know so many about Raleigh Fink. I know these guys. They're like ingrained. They're like they're icons in our city. But like, just gave such substance to all the players and the team and what was going on at the moment. That documentary is fantastic. I feel at this point. Because it was only supposed to play for 2 weeks in Wisconsin at theaters, and it went over for like five because it kept selling out, and it kept doing well. So I believe it's going to come to streaming real soon. I think you can get it on Amazon now. So if you guys are worth like saw it, and I think very poignant. This once again for my Wisconsin listeners, my Brewer fans. After the passing of Bob Uecker, who's in this documentary a bunch. I'm so glad I saw it in the theater before I did it. I highly recommend it, but way before the new Brewer season kicks off, where we'll have our first season without our beloved Mr. Baseball for the first time. I highly recommend watching. It'd be a great way to kind of watch that. I'm going to watch it right before opening day. I always go to opening day. I'm going to watch it again. He's in it a bunch, talking about like a team and a moment that he was uniquely qualified. And the movie's named after his famous saying from the movie. If you ever guys seen the movie Major League, he's the announcer that he goes just a bit outside when Ricky Vaughn throws out. And that's kind of become one of his catchphrases. Not as classic as get up, get out of here, home run. That's what he does. But Uecker's in a bunch. So if you're feeling a little sad for his passing and you want to like remember him, it's a great way. Like you see him in his best in that movie. You just see him like announce games and then talk about history and then reflect on it. I'm really glad that happened before he passed. So that is another movie I saw recently. There's a whole bunch of other ones, but I'm not going to lie to you guys. When I do these solo episodes, it's hard to keep talking by myself this whole time. So I'm going to wrap it up. I might do a second like warm-up episode before I get to the 10 of the year just because I saw a bunch of movies. I just saw about those six, but I have, in the last month, I've seen so many movies. I saw Werewolves. I saw Y2K. I saw Emilia Perez. I saw The Substance. I saw so many movies, that I could talk about, but I was just talking about the most recent ones and just a bit outside, which is cause it just came to my mind. So thank you for listening. If you like us, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you're listening to us on. 5 stars on Apple Podcasts really, really helps. You follow us on Instagram at Better in 3D. We're Better in 3D on Instagram. We're 3D Better on X. I am not that Maddie on. Oh, I'm not that Maddie on X and Instagram. I'm just not that many on X, on Instagram and Snapchat. I am, and TikTok. I'm Garlic Bread Baron. I changed that up. I had to double check. I had to think about that. We also follow our sister podcast, Pegging with Paul. That's our Courage podcast. And that's on Instagram at Pegging_with_Paul. That's pretty much it. So we'll have more episodes coming out. I'm kind of glad I'm bringing it back a little bit, but until next time, bye.